and welcome to Hadfield Education's Good to Great webinar series, where I interview the leading head teachers in the UK. And today I'm joined by Nick Bevington of Town Close School in Norwich. Hi, Nick, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Good to join you.
Excellent. Thank you for being here. So, Nick, I always like to start by finding out sort of your route into teaching. So what took you into education?
I'm one of those people who didn't start off as a teacher. I actually joined a finance graduate program for British Airways. And in my mind, going through school and university, I was looking for that great job and that great career. And I never thought of teaching. When I was a student, I did work in America for some summers, working in American summer camps. Then when I started my finance graduate program and started thinking, is this actually what I want to do for the rest of my life? And realizing that it wasn't, I came back to other things that I'd enjoyed, and I realized I'd love working with young people in America. And I thought about teaching as a career, retrained, and then worked my way from being a classroom teacher to a head teacher.
Excellent. So what was your initial route? Did you do a PGCE?
Yes.
Okay. And within what subject?
So I did a maths specialist PGCE for secondary combined with a general primary. And at the time that was with Newcastle University, and it was a completely new course. And because it was completely new, it was actually released later in the year. And so it was my route into teaching when actually everything else was full. And it was perfect because I wasn't sure if I wanted to be secondary or primary. And it gave me that ability to do both.
Excellent, excellent. And in the early couple of years, who was sort of the biggest influencers within your teaching career?
Well, I mean, there were many. I think my first head teacher was an influence in one key piece of advice he gave me. He was trying to persuade me to take on an opportunity, but he said that in life, if an opportunity comes your way, you need to take it. And I think that sounds obvious, but that's really good advice. And that's sort of how I've ended up where I am now. The second person I really admired was somebody who was, as a teacher, one of the most accomplished practitioners I've ever seen, in that she was just always so good at dealing calmly with difficult situations, about getting the balance right between having that really warm relationship with pupils, but them knowing absolutely who was in charge. And there was no pulling the wool over her eyes, or no getting one over her. And I thought that she was one of the most amazing teachers, currently a serving deputy head, but probably one of the best I've seen in my career.
Excellent. And then in terms of career progression, did you move into middle leadership?
Yes, I did. So the opportunity that the first head wanted me to take on as a head of modern foreign languages role, and bearing in mind I'm a maths teacher,
you can
see why we were having the conversation, but I worked in France in my gap year, and I had done some French as part of my degree as an extra course. And they couldn't find a teacher that they wanted for the role, and they wanted to encourage me. And so I actually applied for a head of department role in a subject that I wasn't a specialist teacher in.
Fantastic. How did that work out?
Well, it worked out very well. You know, in life, if you don't know everything, you have to get the help of people who do. And I was very lucky that at the time there was a student working with us who had studied French A-level. He's now a successful author, incidentally, and is also a journalist. But at the time he was a gap student. And I went through the content for the French grammar lesson with him the night before to really get on top of this piece I was going to go through. And the existing head of languages who was observing the lesson, you could tell him thinking, boy, I didn't realise that this young teacher knew quite so much about French grammar. So I'd done my preparation properly.
Fantastic, fantastic. And how long did you spend within middle leadership?
I spent in total only 4 years, which sounds like a really short time. I spent 3 years in that first school as head of modern foreign languages. And then I got a job as a sideways, moved to another modern foreign languages job to broaden my experience. But actually left that quite quickly because an opportunity came up to be a deputy head in London. And it was for a school that was newly founded, and it was a risk to take the role. But I remembered about thinking about opportunities and taking them. And so age 31, I became a deputy head in a central London school.
Fantastic. And how did that pan out for you?
Ultimately, it was successful. It certainly led to my first headship. And it was a very interesting and steep learning curve. I was a young and still quite inexperienced teacher, really, leading a team of people who were mostly more experienced than me, and certainly many of whom had been in education a long time. But there are certain things that really help you in that situation. Firstly, that sense that actually you're enthusiastic, passionate, keen to support people, and basically everyone's keen to do the best they can for children, even if you differ as to how you're going to do it. And so it was seeing that energy and commitment, I think, that saw me through that. But also there are times when you have to be tough and resilient. And there were some interesting challenges with that role. Being a deputy is actually one of the toughest roles in teaching, I think, both from a school organisational point of view and a day-to-day pupil management point of view.
Absolutely.
And this was made more complex by the fact that we were a multi-sited school with all the safeguarding and procedural elements that go with that. And so it was actually a really interesting and important learning experience.
And in terms of the sort of the big like learns and achievements that you had within that role, what were they?
I think that more than anything, it was growing in confidence and learning that an apparently difficult situation can be dealt with. And there were difficult situations in that role. I think one of the most challenging ones was when I was new in the role. The person who'd done the role previously, who'd been much loved, died suddenly. I had to break that news to pupils. And we were talking about someone who all of the pupils and all of my colleagues remembered with great fondness. He'd done a terrific job. And actually that managing that whole collective grief and mourning is a really, really difficult experience. Another really difficult day I can remember is the day of the 7/7 bombings. My school was just around the corner from Edgware Road.
Oh, wow.
And we were all in school that morning. And there was quite a lot of panic and anxiety and not knowing what was going on amongst both the staff who were getting news coming through and pupils who were obviously getting an idea that things weren't right and how best to respond to that. And so I had the challenge of leading on the ground a response to a situation where mobile phones weren't working, our switchboard was going mad, people wanted to know what we were doing, that their children were safe.
Wow. Okay. And in terms of the move to headship,
yes.
Was that something that you'd always planned? When did you sort of decide or feel that I do want to be a head teacher?
Well, the funny thing is, I didn't go into teaching with the idea that I wanted to be a head teacher at all. I went into teaching because I love teaching. And I remember when I was in my very young teaching days of one of my colleagues, when we were walking to classes and sort of saying, aren't we lucky to be in this environment? When you think about people's working environment, you know, how great it is. It was a sunny day. There were pupils walking happily from place to place. It was one of those idyllic moments. And he said, enjoy these moments, you know, enjoy this time when you're at the bottom. And I really did enjoy it. And I took the opportunity in London. But even then, I didn't think of myself necessarily becoming a head. But by that point, I'd become married, met my wife. We were looking at the next stage in terms of her moving out of London. I was looking at opportunities. And the logical step when you're thinking about opportunities is, well, look at the market. And a headship came up, quite a big school. And I thought, well, this is a complete long shot. But I was a junior school attached to a senior school. And I contacted the senior school head who had offered informal meetings and asked for an informal meeting just to explore whether it was even worth my while going for this role. And we had a conversation. And it seemed from that conversation that we were really aligned as to where we saw education. And from that, he encouraged me to apply. And I went through the application process. I actually flew back from a school trip to get to the second interview, so I was quite jet lagged as well. I got the job. It wasn't an easy job, but that was my route into headship.
Fantastic. And in terms of the first year, first 2 years within headship, What were your big learns within that?
Oh gosh, I think one of the first things you learn as a head is that you need to remember everybody else, but they're not going to necessarily remember you. And so you need to ask people, you know, how their family is, or how was their weekend, or, you know, is your mother feeling better, or whatever it might be, and think about their welfare. And yet they won't necessarily ever even contemplate your needs as a head. It's a different relationship. And the relationship does change because people can't deal with you in quite the same way. I can remember as a young teacher, I was always, you know, one of the people in the staff room who was, you know, in enjoying lighthearted conversations and, you know, being the center of all the fun that goes with teaching. And, you know, you don't lose the fun as a head, but there's a certain distance and you're not part of that group in quite the same way as you were before. And I think that you also start thinking about how you're going to lead things and move things forward. And you start seeing what you've done and what makes a difference. And you have to have quite a strong personality sometimes, because inevitably all of us, not just in teaching, but in general, tend to be quite worried about change and doing things in different ways. There's lots of change management that's involved in headship.
Yeah, so tell me about some of the changes that you've had to implement.
Well, one of the first things I had to do is we had a school that was basically carrying more staff than it could afford. And that's a very challenging situation, because you have to work out what you're going to do in order to make sure that you provide for pupils in a way that's within your staff budget, and at the same time try to preserve, you know, the feeling amongst teaching and other staff that, you know, this is a place that we all value. So I think that was a challenge. And the other challenge I had is it was a school that hadn't previously done well in inspection, but the attitude amongst the teachers was that they were really doing a great job, and that somehow the inspectors just weren't able to see what they were doing, and the inspectors were wrong effectively.
Sure.
And actually there were some key things that needed to change. You know, there were aspects of our provision which we needed to improve, and it was trying to take people on a journey to recognize that and to implement that improvement. And of course, when you have done that, and then when you get a very much better appraisal next time around, or in this case, the time after, because my first inspection was very soon after I joined, I think that you then get people feeling quite satisfied about that and feeling quite pleased and quite validated about their contribution. But leading people on that journey and leading change is not an easy thing to do.
Sure. So tell me about current school and any like initiatives that you're running in Town Close.
Well, we're at a very exciting time in Town Close because we've just been nominated for a TES National Award. We're shortlisted for being the best school in our category. And that is a really wonderful moment when staff realise that their efforts have been recognised in that way. And I think that we've been recognised for that effort because of a number of pupil-led or pupil-inspired projects, with, of course, the support and encouragement of our staff. I think the first thing that we've done is that not only with ourselves, but with many, many other schools around us and with hundreds of pupils from our local area in Norfolk, we have inspired participation in an environmentally friendly racing series, which combines engineering skills with teamwork, with thinking about the environment and looking at the future of zero emissions transport. And there are different levels of this Green Power series. And we started off on what they call the Goblin level, which is for children in primary years. And in that level, you assemble a go-kart and you take part in certain challenges like slalom, drag race and so forth. And pupils drive the car. And pupils are the ones who are taking other roles, like making sure that the driver change is done properly, that someone has to do the push start. And so they feel like they're part of a team driving and running the car. We actually started a race, an event in Norfolk at an old airfield. And lots of people got involved, and one of our staff became an ambassador. We then moved up to the next formula up, where you have to be a bit older, and that's called F24. And now you're allowed to modify modify the cars, and they look really much more like a racing car and less like a kit. And so pupils with adult volunteers have been working on things like the aero package, the battery management, the gearing, the throttle mapping, the passive cooling, and all of those things that go to make a race car run for 90 minutes not run out of battery. We started an event with Lotus here in Norfolk, and we had the first race at Lotus. We qualified for the international finals, which were at Silverstone. And in our first year, we were the best international newcomer. And this year, we actually came third in the international finals in the world. So there are over 100 cars out. And we were third in the world. We were the youngest team there. But our students were a bit lighter, so that does help. Being younger, they're a bit smaller. That's one of the things we've done. We introduced with our school council a new uniform policy, which basically stripped gender labels out of uniform and allowed children to wear the version of the uniform that they felt comfortable with. And that's, in some ways, was a very small change, because we'd always allowed in our policies boys, in quotation mark, to wear their girls' uniform and vice versa. But now all pupils can choose between the skirt stroke dress uniform and the short stroke trouser uniform.
Brilliant.
What's happened is that, firstly, we wrote to parents, and although the local press picked it up, no parents worried about it. And secondly, we introduced it. A handful of pupils have come in their version of the uniform that they didn't previously wear. Not a particularly large number, but it's very natural and easy, and it was an obvious change. And it just shows that we are listening to our pupils and to adapting to the way that society is moving. The third thing we've done is we work really hard to reduce plastic consumption. And there were lots of single-use items that we used to don't have. But our new school council chair, elected by our pupils, using alternative votes, so you know, the most democratic voting system that we could find, she is determined that we are going to go further. And I like the fact that she feels that we can lead. And we've also been working on homework policy, and with the school council, we changed the homework policy. In theory, we're giving the children the same amount that they always had, but in practice, they're getting longer periods to concentrate on things and do them in more depth. So rather than having two homeworks a night, they're having one homework a night, and they're having that homework every other week, and the homework is in theory lasting double the time, which allows them to take their time and not feel on that endless treadmill.
Pressure.
The last thing we've done is we've worked with teachers on feedback. And again, the school council was key to this. And we've been experimenting in different ways of what traditionally you call marking. It's actually better called feedback, because it doesn't have to be on the page. And we've really managed to develop a policy which gives teachers much more professional autonomy and gives them much more time to plan their lessons, whilst I think giving better feedback to pupils. So that's really had a positive effect on workload.
Sounds fantastic. And some real forefronted policies and changes, and you know, and as well, student led, which if you empower people to make decisions, you're always going to get 100% more buy-in, aren't you?
Absolutely. And I think that people often worry that children will make silly or naive decisions if you ask them. And in actual fact, that can be true if they're not used to taking responsibility. But the more that they're used to being involved and taking decisions, the more you find that you tend to make very sensible decisions.
Yeah.
And I think that we need in general a society to have more faith in our young. Their views are often dismissed as being naive, and they would think that because they don't know about the world. But often those fresh eyes actually see things which our own experience and prejudice has stopped us from seeing. Yeah. And whereas I think that young children and older students do need, of course, to listen to adults and to respect adults' views, I think adults need to think a bit more about young people's views and why they think that.
100%. I think as well, with the way in which children nowadays are open to so much in terms of social media and the internet, the way in which they may perceive something could be incredibly thoughtful and really good insight, as opposed to, like you say, we might not necessarily have that, and we may have already had those pre-built barriers, but it sounds absolutely brilliant, the work that you're doing. And in terms of moving forward, do you have any other initiatives that, that you've got sort of your eyes set on?
Well, our next goal, which has been articulated by our new school council chair, is all about taking our environmental awareness further and acting further. And I think if you talk to young people, what is their concern above all else? And as much as the country may be talking lots about Brexit, and young people are definitely a Remain majority, sure, their biggest concern is about the environment, about the future. And there's that feeling that the current generation has known about the issues we now face for quite a while. You know, to my shame, I studied global warming at university in the early 90s. And somehow our generation has put that out of our minds in the way that we've acted. Other things like economic growth and other imperatives have allowed us to, not to think about it clearly enough. And yet the evidence of the rapidity of change and the starkness of what we're facing has grown ever stronger. And I think that the current generation is determined that we need to be more ambitious than 2050 in terms of our carbon neutral targets, and wants to look at all possible ways of eliminating single-use plastic, eliminating the use of fossil fuels where possible, leaving things in the ground. And actually, it starts with what every single person can do. And Greta Thunberg has also been a big inspiration to young people. And actually, we as a staff have led an assembly specifically charting what she has done and her work, because in her, you also have a lesson that as a young person, you can make a difference. And she would never have thought this time last year that she would be such a globally recognized name in just 12 months' time.
Brilliant, brilliant. And within school, what do you feel has enabled, or what do you feel makes a really solid, really strong senior leadership team?
I think that you have got to really think about any team being built upon relationships. And those relationships, those professional relationships, are the key to achieving great things together. And I think that it's not just relationships with the senior team, it's relationships with the staff, the staff's relationships with pupils, and everyone's relationships with parents. I think it's recognizing that you are all pulling in the same direction in terms of, you know, we're all here because we want young people to achieve their best. And I don't think that there's anyone in teaching who doesn't believe that. And actually, if you're not there for that reason, that really is one of the key signs that actually it's the wrong job for you. Yeah. But I think that everyone's in that position. So it's about trying to listen to people's views, about trying to have that spirit of cooperation and understanding, and collectively finding a way forward that will work and will get the buy-in. And the more you can involve people in decision-making, the more likely you are to make those decisions a success. And the biggest driver of staff happiness is that sense of autonomy. I can make a difference. And I think where you have morale issues, it tends to be when you're feeling that actually, what I do isn't really appreciated, and the way I think things should change isn't really being listened to. There are times where people have to do things that they'd rather not, and there are times where difficult messages have to be given. But I think that if you can maximise the positive relationships with people and maximise their input, then you're going to give yourself the best chance to achieve collectively.
Absolutely, absolutely. And what advice would you give to any sort of student teachers or NQTs, you know, entering in first year of profession?
Okay, well, I've seen quite a few NQTs in terms of my own observations, lesson observations, and also I've done some interviewing for Brighton University. And what I would say is that the calibre of people going into teaching these days, I think it's more impressive than ever. And the quality of some of the work that I've seen young teachers achieve is again, really quite encouraging for the future. But I think there are challenges too. And I think that it's the advice for teaching would be rather like the advice for acting. It's definitely not an easy path. And it's a sort of job that you only do if you can't think of doing anything else. because the people who really want to be teachers just aren't prepared to think about any other possibility because that's what they want. So almost if you're in doubt about being a teacher, it's probably not the right job. You've got to know that you want it. And I think all of us teachers have that point where we suddenly realize that that's what we did want. So I think that's the first thing I would say. I think the second thing I would say is that it is a tough profession. And when you look at what you are theoretically supposed to do, actually it seems pretty impossible. And I think you've got to be quite smart with your time and quite smart at realizing what's important and what isn't important. And try to make sure that you focus on those things that really are important. And I think when you're developing your craft with students and when you're in front of a class or dealing with interactions, there are always going to be challenges. And I think that you definitely improve in terms of your assuredness and your ability to take control. I think that the key advice for a new teacher is to play things with a straight bat, not try to be funny, not court popularity, but to be very straight with people, very, very fair, and always to focus on the choices that students have rather than to ever get into a confrontation. So rather than the, you will do this, no, I won't, very much that this is the situation. You know, these are your choices. These are the consequences of the choices. You know, it is down to you. Because ultimately, that is the way it is. And it's having that assuredness, not to be riled or to be provoked or to be flustered by a situation that's difficult. And you know, that can arise anywhere. But of course, when you're dealing with young people, you're dealing with a group of people who are, you know, energetic, but they're keen, they're enthusiastic, but they're also finding their place in the world, and they certainly don't suffer fools gladly.
No, absolutely, absolutely. And what about senior leaders that are thinking about headship and their progression into headship? What advice would you give to those?
I think that people who are the best heads sometimes dismiss themselves as being heads because they somehow don't think they could do it. And actually, I would like all of those people who are thinking that they might like to be a head but don't quite believe that it would be right or worry that they wouldn't be able to take the pressure or think that somehow there'll be somebody else that's better than them. I'd say go for it. In most professions, most of us tend to think of others around us somehow knowing more or being more capable. There's an inherent insecurity about the human nature. But my view is that actually I've seen so many teachers and senior leaders who could make great heads. And I think that most of the rules that apply to teaching and most of the rules that apply to senior leadership are really the same rules that apply to headship. And headship's a role that in some ways frees you from certain day-to-day responsibilities, but actually gives you a different set of very interesting relationships and very interactions. And I think it's a really rewarding role, and that there's nothing more satisfying than standing up in front of a whole school and leading it. So for it, you can do it.
Brilliant. And in terms of outside of work, what takes your mind off of the stresses and strains of the day job?
Well, having a family certainly takes your mind. It can be a busman's holiday at times when you're and you have a family. I play tennis. I play tennis for a team, a local team in Norfolk. I wouldn't say it's that elite a team. Nevertheless, you know, just competing in sport is fun, whatever level you are. I love singing, and I'd say anything that involves joining a choir, getting involved in a local community group, just getting involved in the community, interacting with people who are doing different things from teaching. And then your family and friends and walks and activities and just keeping a balance to life. I think any teacher or any head teacher has to know when they've worked as many hours as they can work in a day. And actually, you need to know when to stop and when to carry on with your life, because otherwise you won't make a great teacher and you certainly won't be able to sustain in the long term.
No, agreed. I think that's something from my experience of dealing with teachers that there's a specific niche that really, they really struggle with that, because let's be honest, a teacher's job is never complete. There's always going to be more that you can do. And it's the same in other kind of roles and environments, but there must be, a time where they draw a line and say, no, I am satisfied. I have done everything that I can do. And then, have a bit of R&R or a switch off. But I do genuinely think there's a proportion of the teacher population who do struggle with that, incredibly conscientious, worry a lot, but only because they want to do the best possible job that they can.
Fantastic. Don't read emails at night is a good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the email is something that people really struggle to get away from. And what about in terms of book? What's the last book that you've read?
Well, I'm now reading a book by Roy Blatchford called Restless School, which is very interesting because it's all about moving forwards and thinking about the future. But in between that, I also went to a talk last week by an internet blogger and a creativity inspirer called Nick Causton. I had a book from his talk, which I read over the weekend. And that's all about this unlocking this sense of creativity in a world where we are ever focusing on the narrow measurables of education. It's all about thinking about the things that really drive success. And he has Einstein's great quote in it, which is that logic can get you from A to B, but imagination can take you anywhere. All about trying to think beyond the measurable.
Excellent. And in terms of work, what's your favourite app that you use?
Oh gosh, that is an interesting question, because I use lots of apps, and we've got different mind mapping apps, and we've got a great app for teaching called Explain Everything. Even I love using in the classroom the random selector apps so that take out any human bias. I'm quite into my music apps, of course, for my own leisure time, and I consume all my news on various free and subscription news apps. And then I think virtually everything that you do in your everyday life these days is on an app. We even have, of course, our great Town Close online presence, and you can even sort out most things for Town Close on your smartphone. So it's difficult to say a favourite, but I think a good thing to do sometimes, just like it's good to go to the supermarket and buy 5 things that you've never bought before, I think sometimes it's good to go onto the App Store and just go and download an app that you didn't think you need. And it's interesting just to always have that spirit of trying something new.
I remember that I did that for a while, where you could get the editor's choice, and you would just discover a new app that you'd never heard of, didn't have really any use for, but because it was applicable to something that you needed, it was a really good way of finding new and up and coming apps as well.
There's some brilliant apps now for teaching. And I really like the ones like Socrative, where you get that interaction between pupils and teachers. And the virtual learning environment we use is also brilliant for being able to have comments that are viewable by everyone. And it really helps discourse. So I think that education is lots of exciting stuff in education.
Definitely. And what about favourite holiday destination? Where do you like to get away to?
Oh my goodness, that's also a difficult one, because there's something. If you think about a holiday, one of the best moments of a holiday is when you dive into clear water. And it's almost as you go underwater and you swim in the cool water with all of those lovely shards of light caused by the ripples on the water. It's almost like every worry that you have sort of fades away, and you're sort of temporarily submerged in paradise. And especially somewhere like the coast of Croatia, where you have many rocks where you can just dive straight into the deep sea. And it's so beautifully clear. And I love, I'm not a particularly good swimmer, but I love swimming in the sea and that freedom that it gives you that's so different from swimming in a swimming pool. But I mean, I love skiing as well, where you're on a mountain and it's just you in the snow. I think sunshine is an important ingredient for any holiday because it gives you that lift of optimism.
Fantastic. I've heard really, really good things about Croatia. Really good things.
Yeah.
It's on my list of destinations.
And yeah, if you get a sailing boat and anchor in a small harbour, dive off and swim ashore. There it's certainly a very beautiful sort of Mediterranean of old type of feel to it.
Lovely. And in terms of if you hadn't become a teacher, where do you think your journey would have taken you?
Oh, that's so difficult, isn't it? Because in a way, lots of teachers find it hard now to imagine doing anything else. But I would like to do something that involved, presenting things or animating things or some sort of communication type role and very much on the human side. And I do enjoy thinking about things and coming up with ideas and discussing ideas. So I think the other thing might be the turning an idea into a business reality. So I quite often think of something that might make a good product. And of course, as a teacher, I never develop it, but I quite like ideas.
Excellent. And who's been the biggest influence overall in your career to date?
Oh, wow. Now, that's a very difficult question. There was one conference that I went to on brain science where a speaker, and he can't be that big an influence because I can't remember his name, but he came out with a statistic that's been an influence, which was his research showed that 98% of what we know, we've taught ourselves, and 2% of what we know, we've been taught. And I remember that thinking, well, of course, whether that's true or not, even if it's out, by a factor of five and it's actually 10% of what we know, that really does make you think about the role of a teacher in a slightly different way. It perhaps makes you obsess a bit less about what curriculum you're covering and obsess a bit more about the human skills that you're developing. But I think there are other great influences that I've loved. I think Stephen Fry is someone who I've found inspiring. And I think I found him inspiring because firstly of his genius in certain respects, but how that's combined with vulnerability and his openness to discuss in his writing about, his emotions and his journey and the highs and lows. And I really admire that. But I've not actually met him as a person. And there are a few professional sports people that I've come to know through teaching. And I tell you what I really admire about them is people often fantasize about being a professional sports person and think how wonderful it would be. And it's amazing just how hard they work, how determined they are. And you don't get to those positions by accident. But no. I couldn't give you a single name who has turned my life around, but I think I've been influenced by quite a few people.
Good. Excellent. Okay. Well, thank you ever so much for your time today and your insight. It's been fascinating and incredibly informative. I really appreciate it. What's the best way for people to get in contact with you?
Well, my email's in the public domain, head@townclothes.com, and on Twitter, I'm at townclotheshead. So those are both pretty easy ways to get in touch.
Brilliant. Well, what I'll do, I'll put the links into the role below and also there'll be a couple of pop-ups as well that people can click and connect with you on. And once again, thank you ever so much for your time. It's been really, really good and informative.
It's a pleasure to speak to you too. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Bye.